To episode 7 of season 4 of ABCDA's Career Journeys podcast. My name is Felicity Brown and I'm here with the co-host Ruchira Tripathi. Hi, Ruchira, how are you today?
Hi, Felicity. I'm great and I'm really excited about our guest today, one of our very own, a leader of the APCDA community. And we have this wonderful opportunity to get to know her as a person and to find out about her career journey. And I know that a lot of members would be very interested in this podcast and to know how she's navigated her journey all these years. And I can't wait to get started.
Yeah, me too. I'm very excited. So I'd like to welcome Dr. Marilyn Mays to the podcast. Marilyn is the Executive Director of the APCDA. She's organized the annual APCDA conference since its inception and conducted numerous research projects on significant labor market and career counseling issues and presented at international conferences. Dr. Mays is a fellow of the National Career Development Association, and she received the NCDA's Eminent Career Award in 2022, the NCDA's President's Award in 2016, and the NCDA Credentialing Commission Service Award in 2016. She received the Lifetime Achievement Award from the Maryland Career Development Association in 2010 and formally developed the ACT profile. So, welcome to the podcast, Marilyn.
Thank you so much. I'm such an honor to be here. Thank you.
All right, Marilyn, we'd love to hear a little bit firstly about who you are as a person. Like, what fascinates you? What drives you?
What drives me is trying to make people a little bit happier. I'm always and feel like I've accomplished something when I can sit back at the end of the day and say, okay, there were a few people that I helped out in some way today.
Nice, very nice. So tell us about your current roles. What are you working on? What do you love about what you do?
What I love about APCDA is that there's so much challenge. There's just so many things happening. Of course, we put on a conference and we do webinars, but there's also materials that we're constantly trying to develop or redevelop, and a lot of different needs that are coming to us from different countries we're trying to fill and see if we can meet those needs. So there's just an immense variety. And one of the things I really value is the variety of cultures. Because it's always educational in terms of seeing the world from a different perspective. There's always another perspective I had never even imagined before.
Yeah, for sure. I know that you work with a lot of people from lots of different cultures. Tell us a bit about how you got your start in your career.
My first job. Well, I was trained as a math teacher, and my first job, since I didn't want to stay in education, I'd been in education all my life up to that point, I wanted to try industry. So I got a job as a computer programmer. And back in those days, there was no such thing as computer science. So my first day, they gave me a book and said, here, this is a Fortran manual, learn how to do it, and then solve this little problem, and then we'll give you a real problem. And pretty soon, I was writing software to help the scientists at our company to graph their data. Today, we do that with Excel. Everyone has access to Excel, and you can get a graph out of there very quickly, a very nice one. But at that time, nobody had any software of that kind. Doing that for the scientists so that they could get graphs out was very important. And then I got to train the scientists in how to use my software. So it felt like I was really they're doing wonderful things for having just had left school, with my bachelor's degree. The
Which
next,
year was this,
and
Marilyn? When you're describing this, it reminds me of Hidden Figures, the movie. Which year was it, Marilyn, when you were working as a computer programmer?
oh my gosh, that was probably 1969. The
Yeah.
next thing I did was to join the Peace Corps and went to the Philippines. And that was really wonderful. I wanted to get away from a high-income country where everything was done in a certain way that we thought was, of course, the right way. I just thought that the rest of the world had different ways of doing things. And I found out that everything was different when I got to the Philippines. One of my examples is that when I was want to wax the floor at home, I would put some wax on a rag and push it, get down on my hands and knees and push it across the floor until I'd covered the whole floor. But in the Philippines, you put the wax on a coconut husk and you stand up and push the coconut husk around with your foot. Very different. But there were other things too that were very different. Go ahead, Felicity.
Oh, no, that's all right. You keep going. I want to hear what happened after the Philippines.
Well, when I was in the Philippines, I learned a whole lot about interpersonal relationships because the Philippines valued much more that you were kind to people. They weren't so much concerned about what you finished, what you accomplished, as how kind you were and your relationships with each other. And that was completely revolutionary to me. I had no idea that one could value that so highly, that accomplishments didn't matter so much. So after I left the Philippines, I went back to this country and got a master's in counseling. And I saw myself, because of my background with computers and math, as a software developer. I wanted to develop software that was used for career counseling. In other words, assessments. And of course, in those days, personal computers were just getting started. So something a person could do on a personal computer that would very quickly provide them with an assessment that would help them to understand themselves a lot better. And I developed a number of different assessments and worked first for a government-like agency. It was a private nonprofit in California called Eureka, the California Career Information System. But that was using government data to provide advice or provide information to young people who were exploring occupations and wanted to know more about occupations. The next thing I did was to look around for ways that I could, first of all, I spent a lot of time with my own business doing my own software, and I still have a number of products that I developed. But I was looking for a place where I could get a job that would pay me well enough, not a nonprofit job, but a for-profit kind of job that would pay me well enough so I could have a nice retirement at that point. And I found ACT. It was the one place in the US that actually had a big enough structure and decent salaries for people and was doing computerized career planning. I was part of a big company. Most people didn't even know I worked there. So for 25 years, I worked there, but people didn't know that. And I took over a program that was developed originally by Dr. Joanne Harris Bowlesby. And then when, you know, after I got there, she pretty much retired and left me in charge of it. And it developed from, we had it first on a CD-ROM, and then we went on to the Macintosh, and then we went on to the Windows version of a PC, and finally onto the internet. And so all of those different versions, and each one with making giant steps forward in how the software worked and how useful it was to the clients, was very rewarding. There were a million students using that software every year. So that was really valuable to me. And then one day, when I was 70, he said, "We're not in that business anymore. We don't need you. You're redundant." Mm-hmm. And I thought, what do I do with myself now? I'm redundant. Okay. And at that point, I didn't want to try to keep up with technology as I had previously and do the software side of things. I wanted to spend my time more on the counseling side of things. And my friend Soon-Hun An, who was Korean-American, said, we really need to start the Asia-Pacific Career Development Association. Marilyn, will you help me?" And I said, yes. Thinking about my life in the Philippines and how much I really value the Asian cultures and what I knew about the differences between the different cultures. And I just thought that would be fascinating to be able to help people in Asia to bring career counseling into their own countries and make it local. So that's how I got here.
So this is your so-called retirement?
Yes, this is my retirement, yes.
It's the busiest retirement I've ever heard of.
Certainly, I'm not getting paid for this, so it's retirement in that sense.
I wanted to go back a little step there. I know you said you were in the Philippines and you came back to the US to do the Masters of Counseling, and I can see the link between your programming experience and the assessments, but why career counseling? What was it about that field that interested you?
Counseling is primarily helping people with feelings. And that is what I was going for. I did want to help people with what would matter most to them. When you solve math problems, you find out that your students really aren't very interested. And I spent a lot of time as a teacher trying to make people pay attention to me. I thought if I could just work with people, help people with the problems that they thought were important, that would be so much more fun because they would be happy with the assistance I was giving them instead of thinking, another math class. So when I got into counseling, what I wanted to do is use my background in being able to understand how a computer worked. There are thousands of occupations out there, and a person, a human being, can't keep all that in their head, but a computer can. That's the skill that a computer has, and that's the strength it has over humans. Now, certainly, humans have a lot of other strengths, which are very important, but I wanted to be able to bring the power of the computer to the counseling situation. And nowadays, I think with AI, nobody needs any software anymore to do it, because what I learned through my doctoral research was that the most important factors in finding the right occupation was to find a job in which you would use the skills that you most enjoyed using. So it was how you spent your time in the job and helping people to envision what that would be like. When people talk about what they want to do in their work, if they can actually think about, okay, you're going to spend 60% of your time reading, and then you're going to spend another 40% of your, or 30% of your time analyzing the data that you have collected from your reading. That's the kind of thing people need to know, because if those are skills that they don't really like, then they're going to be miserable. And actually now we can ask the questions to the clients and get answers to those questions. What do you enjoy spending your time doing? And we can put that into the computer and get answers with AI. And it gives you some pretty good suggestions. A lot of what I was doing before is completely obsolete at this point.
Yeah, but it all led to where we are now.
Yes.
Yeah. Richie, over to you.
I wanted to actually dial back a little bit. We skipped over the childhood, and I was wondering, so you were talking about your career, about your appreciation for interpersonal skills and the little bit of a culture shock that you had when you were in the Philippines, your interest in mathematics, your interest in programming. I was actually quite interested to find out, what was your childhood like? How did you grow up? How did your parents raise you? What kind of family did you have, which kind of eventually led to some of these experiences that you had and that you also valued?
Yes, we always talk about how the parents influence the children. My father was an engineer and my mother was a chemist. So a very strong background in science in my family, and a focus on practical solutions, getting things done. I was the second child. My older sister passed away when I was 4. So I went from being the youngest child, and as you probably know, the youngest child tends to compete with the older child and be a little bit mischievous to try to get attention. And the oldest child tends to be very serious and dutiful and accomplish what their parents want because they were alone with their parents and learned to please the parents very early on. So for me, that was reversed a little bit. I came with the mischievous part from being the second child, but then I learned how to be very dutiful and accomplish what my parents valued, and very serious. And so I don't remember my childhood. I remember being an adult.
Okay.
Do you remember hobbies or interests that you had as a child, things that you did maybe outside of schoolwork or studies?
I always loved nature, and I've always been a person who wants to go hiking and be outside and enjoy the beauty of nature if I can. My hobbies right now are gardening and cooking. And gardening is a kind of meditation because you spend an awful lot of time doing the same things over and over again. But it's also working with the soil and getting connected to the earth that we live on. The cooking is very similar to that in the sense that it's very practical, and the results are something you immediately enjoy. You have a good dinner. Both of those are really get me back in touch with the everyday life.
Do you remember having thoughts about career options when you were in high school or university, or thinking about, okay, these are the multiple choices I have, I'm confused, this is what I should go for? How did those thoughts play on your mind when you were younger?
Yeah, I remember very clearly having a class in eighth grade in which they said, pick three occupations that you want to go into and research them. And my three occupations were mathematician, math teacher, and author. And now in close to the end of my career, I think I've done all of those. I certainly use the mathematics in my research, and it's very helpful to me to have that ability to understand numbers and for them to speak to me. That is something I still love doing. And whenever I get a chance, I like to write research results for APCDA if I can. And then the other part was the trying to create new materials. An author is a person who creates things which don't previously exist. And I always saw myself as a person who would someday create materials that would be new and do things that didn't happen before, which of course was the computerized career planning part of my career. And that was a very long part of my career. That was about 40 years. So I did a lot of that.
So what would you consider your most important career decision to date?
Answer that with the question of what career advice would I give people? I would say you have to balance following your heart and following your head. For me, going to the Philippines when I was fresh out of school was a very important way of following my heart. And it really changed my life. It helped to make me who I am today. I later in life followed my head. I found a job which paid well. So it was not just in my field, something I love doing, but also gave me a good income, which has allowed me now to be a volunteer full time. I think I had the right balance on that one. I recommend that strongly to anyone who's thinking about their careers. Sometimes follow your heart and sometimes follow your head.
And is it similar to what you've learned in life, or would you say something different to that about learn? What have you learned in your life?
I would say there's a lot of other things I've learned in my life too, and that is that people's feelings matter. That even the most lowly person, even somebody that might be providing service to you, matters in terms of their who they are as a human being and how they feel about what they're doing. And making life just a little more pleasant for everybody in your life can have big rewards, because you can be happier and they can be happier.
So what's next for you, Marilyn?
Oh, what's next for me, I hope, is retirement.
You've been practicing retirement for a long time now.
Yeah, I'd like to have retirement where I'm not trying to accomplish things all the time.
Or you could explore a completely new, you know, you could chase tornadoes or whatever else you want to do.
I could indeed.
All right. And finally, we'd love to hear a favorite motto, something that you might live your life by.
Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. That was something I learned in church. And I believe that if you think about other people's feelings and realize how they are reacting to what you are, how you're interacting with them, that you can sometimes realize that it's very important to be responsive to their needs and not just your own needs.
A nice way to finish off our podcast today. I'm wondering, Marilyn, do you have any final words that you wanted to share with our listeners?
I think that career development is a field that is challenging continuously. Over the 50 years that I've been in this field, I've never gotten bored. And I think there's just so much challenge and so much to learn. And I expect that I will continue learning till the end of my life.
We all have a lot to learn from your experiences, your great career, the example that you set for us as career development practitioners. So we wanted to honor all of that service by having you join us today. So we want to say a big thank you for sharing your time, your insights.
You're very kind, Felicity. Thank you.
Great to get to know you a little bit more today.
Thank you.
Richard, any last words?
Thank you, Marilyn. Thank you. Thank you for me, from me as well. I think for me, the takeaway today is sometimes listen to your heart, sometimes listen to your mind, and don't stress so much, I think. And the other piece is the feelings matter, the feelings of other people. So always keep that in mind. So those are the two things that I'm taking away from today's conversation.
Thank you. That makes me feel really good. Thank you.
Yeah, and the ability to make people happy is also, you started in the beginning. So some very wise words. Thank you once again. And we'll see everyone and we'll talk to everyone for our next podcast in another month or so. So thank you again, Marilyn.
Thank you. It's been wonderful. I appreciate it.